Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this Hit Chat Chit Chat. Before we get into our special guest this week, I have a really quick special giveaway I want to enlighten you guys on and how you guys can partake and actually win a free bag. Recently, I partnered up with a company called Team No Airs. You guys can find them on Instagram at Team No Airs, or you guys can go to their website, no-airs.com, or you can go to my website, rbibaseballllc.com, and that way you guys are going to get 15% off if you go through my website. But the giveaway that we're doing, I just released a little YouTube video for it, but the giveaway that we're doing is their No Airs No E2 catcher's bag. This thing is awesome. It's hefty. It's got fat boy wheels. I've got a little review video on the YouTube, RBI Baseball LLC. Go check that out. We're giving that away. You have to go through. Tune in to the YouTube video to figure out how you can win this for free. The giveaway is going to be April 4th. So we got a couple weeks, a little bit to get going. But go check that out. Go check out Team No Airs. And let's get into the podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hit Chat Chit Chat. We've had a little bit of a hiatus, but we are back. It is March. We've gotten through all of the winter training. We've gone through the high school tryouts, and now we're able to kind of get back a little bit more into the content game. And today, I'm really excited to have a new guest with us, somebody that I've been chatting with for a long time. I really only knew him as of one name for a little bit, and it was an interesting name. We got Sauce Hitting. Let me pull this up. We got Sauce 8 Hitting, and Mr. Matt, if you wouldn't mind going through a little bit of a background on yourself, sir, kind of give us a little bit of who you are and stuff like that, and then we'll get into the questions. I'm really excited to have you on, but run through a little bit of your background for us, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, thanks for having me, Connor. I appreciate it, dude. Always love getting on these things and talking baseball, talking hitting. I'm Coach Matt Fritz. I grew up outside of Chicago, about 20 miles north. Played my college ball at Bradley University, which is in kind of central Illinois, part of the Missouri Valley Conference. Good conference when I was there. We had Wichita State, Missouri State, Creighton were kind of like the three-headed monster, but two of those three teams have left, which was a shame. I didn't like seeing those guys leave. Got done playing. I got a job with a sports analytics company for about 6 years. But while I was there, I volunteered for my high school I played at because it was about 10 minutes from where I worked. So I was able to stay around the game a little bit. And then as time passed, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not set out for corporate America. I don't want to be here much longer. And I had an opportunity to go coach in China. I worked for MLB China. We went around southern China, eastern China, working at the developmental centers out there. And there's some good ball players out there. A lot of it was growing the game, introducing some of these young athletes, young kids, the game of baseball, but also player development at the higher level. So that was a treat, and it kind of got me. I was at a crossroads between working in corporate. Do I want to pursue baseball? So it kind of got me out of corporate, got me into player development, and the last 2 or 3 years I've been doing private instruction, coaching some teams here in Denver. And I say this to everybody, man, we got the best job in the world.
We do, man. We really do. Getting out to go out and be in China, man, and being able to kind of bring this beautiful game to, you were saying, new people. How was that? Like, what was that like? How did that opportunity like arise? And you know, how is that something that you feel has been able to kind of bring in for the last couple of years of you working with lessons and teams? How have you been able to bring in that experience and kind of work with that?
That's a good question. I think first off, it was kind of just getting me out of my comfort zone. You know, that's the most isolated culture in the world. So being able to work and teach the game that I love, that I played, in an entirely different culture and society and part of the world was really, really cool. Some of the coaches I met out there really were solid dudes who could teach the game at an elementary level, but also at a higher level, being able to communicate with 10-year-olds, who didn't speak great English and do the same thing with, you know, future draft picks, high school guys, college guys there. So just learning from these dudes, kind of keep my mouth shut, ears open, just got me excited. When I got back from China, I had a place that I coached. It was at Diamond Club. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yep.
And so I already kind of had an in with them. I coached some of their teams. I did some privates. But when I got back, you know, I was starting from scratch. But I just kind of went with it and kept my head down. And, you know, I've been able to take what I've learned from China, from my experience playing, from organizations, and kind of crafted my own, created my own philosophy. And I am now, you know, I have a good little program I run. I got 40, 50 kids I work with, and, you know, things are good.
Hey, yo, I love it. I love it. What was the experience like working with players that have never necessarily trained or even known what baseball is like? Have you been able to kind of take those where you kind of have to teach something brand new and, you know, rub off the passion that you have for baseball onto somebody else? How have you been able to bring that over, and have you run into any kids where you've had to kind of break out some old drills that you used to do in China or something to get them to love that game? Like, have you had to run into anything like that?
Great question, dude. I think patience is something I really learned. I learned quick because these kids, you know, I learned the language a little bit, some baseball terminology. But for the most part, you had kids who've never played, didn't speak great English. So I really had to be patient with them. But like the kids in America, man, these kids learn quick. And if they're into it, you know, the body self-organizes fast with right, you know, proper drills. So I think patience is what I've brought from China back here, dealing with, because I, you know, I deal with college kids, I deal with 9-10 year olds. So being able to have patience, being able to communicate with the different age groups, I think is super important for what we do. So yeah, I would say that was one of the things I learned. I had to learn it quick.
You have to, man. You have to.
Yeah.
So for you, where do you train out of? Where the 40, 50 guys, man, that's not an easy roster right there to be running some privates and then also coaching two different teams. So you probably have a very busy schedule. So where do you train out of, and what does that kind of environment look like for when you are training?
Yeah. So I train out of Premier West, that facility up north, and then I do some work down at the Marucci facility because that's where the Yard Dogs program is run out of. So I kind of go back and forth there, but a majority of the work I do is out of Premier. And in terms of training, you mean kind of like just the day-to-day and stuff we're working on?
Yeah, so what's the environment like for when your guys show up? I mean, obviously it might change a little bit from when you got your college guy and then your 9-10s and stuff like that. But for the environment when someone walks into the, let's go Premier West, when they walk into that facility, what's the environment like? What are you trying to build so that way right when they walk in they know, you know, now, this is a nitty-gritty spot that is going to a little blue-collar action. Do you got, like, I don't know, $1,000 TVs just all hanging around, all pearly white, everything? Like, what's the kind of environment that you're trying to build over there?
I like that. I would say it's a little more blue-collar. You know, we use some tech there. I know we got hit tracks, we got TVs, but to be honest, I don't really use tech. I use video. Video is the only technology I kind of use. And nothing against tech. I think, you know, there's some good things we can do. I think we can verify a lot. But when we walk in, it's a little more blue collar, get down to business. But when I start, a lot of what we do is movement prep stuff. So they walk in, you know, we'll talk about practice, how that's going, games, if they've been playing. And then we'll get right into kind of some movement prep stuff, getting the body geared up to move the right way. And I got a bunch of drills that I'll do for that. That's more tailored to each individual. And then once we get the body prepped and we get, you know, warmed up, then we'll kind of get into some of the drill work and kind of go from there.
Beautiful. So what does, you say that, you got drills a little bit more individually personalized for players and stuff like that. What necessarily does the training look like for you? Again, it's probably going to look a little different from your college guy to your 9 to 10 guy. But let's say you got a 17-year-old that walks in, brand new guy. Like, what does the training look like for you? Is there a lot of failure that you guys incorporate? Is it a lot of machine plyos? Like, what does the training look like for you?
So we can kind of get into it here. So I believe that, hitters hit in an open skilled environment, meaning we're reacting. We're reacting to what these pitchers in these labs and these laboratories are coming up with this new, these edgertronic cameras and this tech. Like, these guys are literally in a laboratory like mad scientists devising different pitch grips and pressures and release points. And their stuff is nasty on top of throwing, velo. So as hitters, we don't have that luxury. We can't sit in a lab and come up with this stuff. We are reacting to what's coming out of that lab. So I believe that what helps us react is vision and timing. And vision and timing correlates. It's directly related to our setup and our first move from setup. So we will spend a lot of time on setups for these guys. I don't care if you're 22, pro ball, or you're 10 years old. We'll spend a lot of time figuring out a setup that allows these guys to move freely, move in balance, and we'll work a lot on the first move from setup because I think that's what's most important. I think that's the most important move we make as hitters, prepping everything ready for the swing, not so much the swing itself. So a lot of the training we'll do is moving the balance, kind of hard over audio to show it, but it's simple stuff. It's stepping the balance, moving the balance, getting to 50-50, getting to a strong position, a strong platform, and then operating our swing from there. But it takes a lot of repetition. It takes understanding what muscles allow us to get to those good spots, those good positions. So a lot of the work we do is everything that comes before the swing is essentially what I'm getting at.
I like that. I like that a lot. Now, when you guys are going through, are you guys trying to, is it a lot of feel-good stuff? Like, for me, when I'm working with somebody, if we can't walk, we're not going to try and jog. And I view walking as the T in front toss. So if you can't have consistent movement in a low-pressure environment, there's no shot I'm going to try and throw you on the machine, just because I know you're immediately going to go to what you're used to, and we're trying to get rid of what you're used to, and we're trying to make these new movements. So how do you go about your environment with somebody like that? Is there a lot of failure? Is it a lot of success? Is it, how do you kind of structure those? And again, probably going to look a little bit different from athlete to athlete, skill level, but what's the kind of goal that you're trying to get across before you guys look to either A, move on, or is it kind of just go at it day to day? We'll reevaluate every single time.
It's a great point, dude. And, I think you can have the greatest information in the world, but if you can't teach it in a way that flows, kind of like you're saying, like, you can't just put a kid into machine work. You can't just put a kid into angle toss you can't run before you're walking, like you're saying. And a lot of what we're doing is rewiring. Like, we're reprogramming these kids to move a different way than what they're used to. And that takes time, and you don't get rid of old habit, you replace it, and you replace it with repetition. So from a low pressure standpoint, like you're saying, T flips, that's where you'll really work in the new movements. And then you do have to test it. You do have to test to see, is it holding up? And that's where our skill comes into play. That's where communication comes into play. So I think, once you see them repeating that move over and over, and you have repeatability and you have confidence, then I'll test it. We're disrupting timing. We're doing angle toss. We're doing fastball curveball mix rounds, fastball slider. And that's where the video comes into play. Like, are these moves holding up against live arm? Are these moves holding up against velo? And it's crazy, dude, because you'll see these young dudes. I got some 10, 11, 12-year-olds who've been with me for a long time. And I'll put them into these drills that I do with some of these college guys or some of these high school guys that walk in the door. And they are more efficient, and they can execute these drills because they've been trained to, you know, they're moving better, they're moving right. So I think the progression of how we do it is important. Can't just throw a kid into the fire. Sometimes maybe if you think like, I think this dude can handle it, you can try it and it might work. But for the most part, you got to walk before you run. You got to walk before you jog. But that's the art in it, you know, for us. And that's what makes it fun, man.
It really does. That's the part that, for me, dude, I love just building training programs. I love putting together practice plans. Like, to me, it feels like a puzzle. It's like, all right, like, we can't make every single week the exact same thing. Every single drill has its benefits, but then also has its negatives. So, like, you know, one kid might be doing this, so this drill's perfect for him because the, you know, downside of that drill, you know, however much downside there is, you know, won't go against what he's working on. But the same player over here might have the same deficiency, but the downside of that drill might bring it out worse than this kid. So you got to find a same drill that works on the same positive but has a different, you know, backside of it. And just like all of that, to me, that puzzle piece is what makes it fun for me, and I'm sure that's what makes it fun for you. And like you were saying, you need to throw them a little bit to the wolves, but you don't want, you know, let the whole body just get destroyed. So for you, what does failure look like? Is it on like a monthly scale where, you know, you retest every month, every 6 weeks? Is it on a day to day, you know, depending on how they're feeling, what they got going on? Like, how often would you say you're trying to have your players, not trying to, but how often are you trying to get your players to, you know, fail? Is it at a 5% rate, you know, we just wanting good feel goods? Is it, you know, at a 60% rate, close to almost game-like? Like, what in your training environment are you guys trying to get through with failure?
That's a great question. You know, I think what I used to believe, and this was, you know, if you knew what I was teaching 6 years ago, you would punch me in the face, and I'd punch myself in the face, too.
We're all probably there, man. We're all probably there.
Uh-huh. And that's a good thing. You know, that's growth. That's us getting out of our comfort zone. That's learning. But I used to think that instruction was, you know, when I first started doing it, was feel good. Like, let's do a lot of T-work. Let's do a lot of flips. Let's really just look good and feel good. And then these guys, you know, in a game environment, they weren't doing so well. And it's like, yeah, but that doesn't check out. He looks good. Like, but what I was forgetting was, like, these guys need to get their butts kicked in the cage. Like, they need to fail in the cage. It's not about always feeling good. That's fine to come in and feel good, and then you're leaving with confidence. But when my guys walk out the door, I want them feeling good, but not so much good like we just did T-work and flips. Good like, coach put me in a situation that was tough. I stunk for a little bit, but we worked through it together. And that's what it's about, like me guiding them through. Like, if we're doing a round of like fastball, curveball. So I do a lot of fastball, curveball mix where the focus is after you land on curveball, we have to reset back to fastball. So we're not getting beat on a fastball down the middle. So I'll do this drill with high school guys, you know, with all of my guys, but with high school dudes and college dudes. And they'll be constantly late on that curveball, on that fastball after curveball. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing here? Like, let's go. And so when we do stuff like that, it's not so much about me getting on their ass and making them feel, you know, less of whatever. It's let's work through it together. And when we're done here, we're feeling accomplished. Like, all right, we really did, you know, put in some good work here. We got through it together, put some fixes in, and now next time I expect it to be better. So it's kind of stuff like that where, you know, kid is struggling. All right, well, let's figure it out. Let's not just say, oh, hey, you know, you're all good. Tough session, but we'll get them next time. It's like, no, let's get through it together. Let's work on it together. And when you're done here, when you leave, you're feeling pretty damn good about what you just accomplished. And it's not every time, but most of the time, that's how, you know, I want them leaving want them to feel.
I love that. I love that. And it's one of those things to where it's frustrating as an instructor, because I'll be in a cage, and this was happening for the last like year or so, I don't know, where I've been out and about at different facilities and stuff. There was a time where I was training out of like four different facilities every other day, just doing an absolutely round robin stuff. And I'd be in a cage next to somebody and I'd overhear, and it would be, you know, in my cage, my guy, again, not pissed, but they're, you know, frustrated, because it's like, all right, you know, we're succeeding at, you know, 60-65% rate, but, you know, every, you know, third we are messing up or whatever it is, you know. And then the kid next to us, all they're getting is just little front toss flips, and, you know, the bats cracking and everything like that. And, you know, that's their entire session. And it's like, you know, oh man, I feel great. But that's the same kid that doesn't understand why they're struggling in the game. You know what I mean? And so seeing that, it's frustrating at the time, especially there's a lot of the communication piece, like you were saying earlier, that has to come in. So that way the athlete understands why we're doing it, and, you know, making sure like, hey, the reason you're failing is because I'm challenging you. It's not that you're a bad hitter. It's that what we're doing is challenging. The reason that he's not, you know, failing is because he's not being challenged right now. You know, whether that's they're on a feel-good round or, you know, whatever they need for them, that's not what you need right now. And so making sure that there's that communication aspect so that way the athlete understands, because, I mean, baseball is already a tough enough game, but you have to be able to train like the game. And if you're training at 100% success rate of always being the greatest, and then you go to the game and you're at a, you know, 70% fail rate when you're doing well, you're not going to understand why you suck. You're not going to understand why you struggle. And then that's going to be the part that makes you want to quit, because you feel like you're almost like hopeless. And that's the part that I think a lot of places don't necessarily always look to right away. If that makes any sense.
No, well said. Absolutely right. And I do believe that when you put kids in a stressful situation or a challenging situation, I don't care the age, they're gonna fail. They're gonna screw up. But with each screw up, there's a chance for correction. So there's more screw ups. There's more correction. They're learning. They're understanding how now I can take this correction and put a fix in a game, literally in between pitches. And you hear the cliche, oh, the average hitters can adjust game to game, the good at bat to at bat, the great pitch to pitch. Like, okay, well, how do you teach that? You don't teach that off flips and tee work. So when I walk into a cage and I see a dude doing tee work and flips, I'm out. If that's all you're doing, these guys aren't getting better. I don't care the age. They're not getting better. And, you know, not to say that.
False sense of security.
Agreed. Agreed.
It really is. What would you say is the biggest issue struggling the average 14-year-old to 18-year-old hitter? What would you say is like the biggest, you know, just general average issue that you're seeing?
They don't move right, and a lot of them chase exit velocity off a tee, which I still don't understand why that means anything. But, you know, and 13, 14 is a very, very crucial age for these guys, because they're starting to build body awareness. They're starting to feel their bodies. They're starting to, like, take in some philosophies, and they're learning, you know, different swings, whatever. So I think instruction at 13, 14 is crucial. That's why I love the age. But, you know, there are kids who are 17, 18 who have come to me, and I'm just like, dude, it's too late to fix you. Like, you've ingrained so many bad habits. And it's not necessarily bad coaching. A lot of it's human nature, too. If you think about, like, think about the development of a young hitter, like us at 6, 7 years old, they put a ball on a tee, and all we're doing is just trying to get the barrel on the ball, you know? And they're making this move with the barrel, which is a shoulder move that's taking them off plane. And so they hit it, people cheer, the kid thinks that he's doing a good thing, so he's going to repeat that. So we don't get taught out of that move. 7 years old, you still have it, 8, and it just keeps going until you either get instruction or you figure it out on your own, or you don't, you stop hitting, you stop playing. So a lot of it's human nature, spin.
Then those start coming at you.
Exactly. So, you know, part of it's human nature. Part of it is coaches at the younger levels who are doing their very best and they have great hearts. They just don't know instruction. And so this, these movement patterns stay with us up into 12, 13, 14, and they don't get coached out of us, you know. And then you think about, like, from an approach standpoint with young kids, we're taught wait to see the ball when we're young, right? Of course, because the ball's so slow. We have to wait back to see it. And you still wait back to at 8 years old, 10 years old, you're doing it. But then if you're still waiting to see the ball at 12, 13, 14, that ball's by you, right? So that whole mindset of wait to see it, wait to read it, guys start throwing hard younger, and dudes are getting blown up. So now they're, everything is a rush and a panic, and the swings are just, and you see it everywhere. And it's a shame because we want to help everybody. We can't, it's impossible. But a lot of it's human nature, man. A lot of it is not malicious. It's just the way it is.
It's the, for me, I honestly think, and exactly what you're saying, it's the perception. For me, I feel like younger players, the perception of which they're being taught, we're on, they're, most of the time they're on two different pages from the coach. So like you were saying, when they're playing t-ball, yanking the shoulder, they make contact, they're cheering. The parents are cheering just because, you know, little Timmy, you know, was running the bases. Yeah. But the kid thinks that they are cheering because they just hit the ball at 1,000 miles an hour. And so then they keep getting older, and then all of a sudden you start getting introduced to curveballs at the 12, 13, 14 age, and that's the biggest drop-off for when kids start quitting is because they don't understand the perception of which that, you know, oh, I'm doing this, and I need to be doing this. My coach is saying this. I'm actually doing this. Like, my biggest one is the people that just always yell, hit it the other way. But yeah, a kid interprets that, or letting it travel. A kid interprets that as, oh, instead of me waiting and changing my timing, as we had talked earlier, is the most important thing. Instead of changing my timing, I'm going to change now my swing just so I can touch it and hit it the other way. Now, the coach is going to get mad because, well, why are you swinging it like, you know, 60 or, you know, 10% hard, you know? Well, you wanted me to hit it the other way. It's that perception. And a lot of the time, I feel like just people aren't on the same page, and what they're asking of the player and what the player is thinking or is being asked are almost two completely different things. And instead of, like, actually learning and changing that, you know, until you get that instruction where a coach actually sits you down and, you know, walks you through it, that's when kids just want to quit because it's just confusing. Yeah. And it's already a difficult game to begin with. Hey, throw in all this other gibberish. I'm going to go play soccer. I'm going to go play lacrosse. I'm going to go play video games. I'm going to be the next, you know, YouTube star, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly, dude. It's already hard enough. So when these guys are confused or they're being thrown, there's so many things being thrown at them, it's a hard game. And these guys just stop. But you're absolutely right. There's a little bit of a disconnect. It's like guys who say, all right, you got to live in the gaps. Like, we have to live right center, left center with approach. But then they're teaching a swing that doesn't allow that to happen. So it's like, well, what are we doing here? Yeah. So these guys, they're trying. Like, these young players, they want to do well. They want to listen. But coaches, I mean, shoot, a lot of us, myself included early on, a lot of us, we were coaching athleticism out of guys. We were coaching the natural ability out of guys. It's not malicious. It's just,
it's what, you know, we thought was best.
It's what we thought was best. Have ego. Ego is a hell of a thing.
Well, brother, is there any YouTube channels you want to plug? Any podcasts? Any books that you've read? Is there anything that you're doing? Anybody that you're attached to partner-wise, affiliate-wise? Anything that you've got that you'd like to kind of reach out and preach to the people? Anything?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm definitely in the Latta camp, Doug Latta. You know, I he's a friend, he's a mentor, I've learned a lot from him. So he's not as active on social media, but Craig Hyatt on Twitter is unbelievable. And he does it for the hitters. He doesn't do it for ego, he doesn't do it for self, he does it for the hitters, and he doesn't have much commentary, which allows people just to see it through their own lens, their perspective. He's not putting a bias on it. So I would say, I mean, Doug's got a lot of information on YouTube. Ahead of the Curve podcast with Jonathan Gellner. JG's a friend of mine. He's awesome. He's had a bunch of good guys on his podcast. So Doug and Craig are, and another guy, a friend of mine, who's not really on social media, but these dudes are some of the smartest minds in baseball. I think Doug's a mastermind in his own respect, what he teaches. So follow these guys, Doug Latta, Craig Hyatt, Gellner, Head of the Curve podcast. There's just so much good information that these guys are giving away for free. They put these on YouTube. This is stuff that, you know, shouldn't be out there, but Doug wants to make this game better. He sees a lot of what's being taught, and it's, you know, the wrong stuff. So he's put a lot of his stuff he's acquired for 20, 25 years on YouTube. It's all readily at our fingertips. So I recommend getting on there, just listening, just kind of watching what he's doing. And Craig Hyde on Twitter with all the videos of these big league hitters. And so those three, I'd say, are really good follows.
Beautiful. And for everybody listening, we'll put the all the links in description or in the description down below, so that way you guys can easily access all that information. The one thing with Craig, man, I've got to figure out how he's getting all these different angles.
I know.
He's a master, man.
He's a savant. He uses MLB savant, or is it MLB savant?
Or is it I think I know what you're talking about. Because MLB has that video room, right? Or is it something else?
I don't know if he gets the videos from there, but he uses, like, he's sent stuff sometimes that Savant uses, like the pitch tracking data and stuff. Like that stuff he breaks down too. It's really cool. Like you can see the different angles. You're talking about like alignment for hitters and stuff. But Savant is cool, but I don't know where he gets the videos, man, but it's awesome.
It really is.
I use all his videos just to share information and let guys just kind of see how these guys are moving, see what they're doing, you know, non-biased.
Beautiful. Well, if you'd be able to kind of plug your Instagram, your Twitter, anything that you've got, and again, we'll put all of that stuff down in the description down below, so that way anyone that's listening would be able to easily access all that information, and then anywhere that people would be able to schedule some lessons with you as well.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. You know, my account is, I've gotten some business from it, but that's not what it's about. I'm just trying to share good information out there, kind of do what Craig's doing with the video and letting people see. So it's been good. It's been good. I'm able to connect with guys and, you know, take a look at their videos. They send me DMs and stuff. And anything I can do to help these young dudes find someone who me and you probably were looking for when we were playing, you know, someone to help.
Beautiful. And what's the social media handles?
My Instagram is Sauce8Hitting. And then Twitter is just Matt Fritz. I think it's like 1307. But I post some stuff on Twitter, but not really too active on there. Yeah.
And then where can people go to schedule lessons with you?
They can DM me on my Instagram. That's pretty much that, and word of mouth is really all I go off of.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. I really appreciate the time that you've taken, and I'm really excited to get this out and about so that way people can start listening. And I'm really excited to get going with these podcasts. Again, thank you, everybody, for joining and tuning in. Be ready for these to be dropping again weekly. And to everybody, that was Hit Chat, Chit Chat. Thank you very much.